I've been in this business 20 years and, you know, mean distance between failure and on-time performance and customer journey time. And, you know, you go down the list of all the things that we, you know, measure in this business are all important. But to me, the absolute number one and most important is customer satisfaction. You know, if someone made the joke to me once that if you're running 100% on time, but you're punching every customer in the face, they're probably not going to be satisfied. And that's not going to show up in your on-time performance data, right? I mean, yeah, it's, but it will show up in your customer satisfaction.
Welcome to the Mobility Innovators Podcast.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mobility Innovator Podcast. I'm your host, Jaspal Singh. Mobility Innovator Podcast invite key innovators in the transportation and logistics sector to share their experience and future forecasts. In this episode, we'll be discussing the role of transit in megacity. Our today guest is responsible for managing the largest transit agency in North America. If you're still guessing, it is New York City Transit, the agency responsible for subway network and buses in the New York City. He joined as the president of New York City Transit in May 2022. Previously, he served as a director and partner at the Boston Consulting Group in their public sector and industrial good practice area. He also served as the CEO of Boston 2024, the organization that sought to bring the 2024 Summer Olympic and Paralympic Games to Boston. He's a transit enthusiast and was the Massachusetts Secretary of Transportation from September 2011 to October 2014, and previously the General Manager of MBTA. I'm so happy to welcome Richard Davey, President of New York City Transit. Now it's time to listen and learn. Hello, Richard. I'm so happy to have you on the podcast. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule. I'm really excited because given your long journey in the transportation and consulting space, I'm really excited to learn from your experience.
Well, thank you for having me. I look forward to sharing some thoughts and your questions. Looking forward to the conversation.
Great. So I want to kickstart our discussion with your personal journey, because I already shared in my intro with audience that you had worked with MBTA, Boston 2024, Boston Consulting Group. You had like such a long and interesting career. I'm curious to know some other interesting fact about your career and some highlight of your professional journey and anything you haven't posted on LinkedIn.
Yeah, sure. So I'm an attorney. By trade, actually. And I didn't take transportation sort of courses or classes in college or high school for that matter. I think I came to this in part. I took public transportation to high school. I took the MBTA to high school.
Yeah.
I went to school just outside of Boston. I lived outside of Boston, but went to school in Boston. So I guess I've always had public transportation in my blood. But my first job out of law school, I actually worked at the INS, the Immigration and Naturalization Service, which no longer exists. Mm. It was folded into the Department of Homeland Security after 9/11. And I worked here in New York. So this is my second stint in New York City. I was a young lawyer here for 3 years and a resident of Manhattan during 9/11, actually. But in that, I think in that year time, I worked for the Justice Department for the government. You know, learned a lot about people's stories, about why they wanted to emigrate to the United States. Many folks were seeking asylum, you know, from countries that were oppressing them based on their race or their gender or their political affiliation. And so, I heard a lot of not always truthful stories, but many were, and many were compelling. And so I think in that regard, I probably have still to this day, as I look out my window, by the way, and look over at Ellis Island here in New York, and I still have an appreciation for, the place where I work and live, and the United States, with all of our imperfections and flaws, you know, is still a country that, that folks feel like they can come and bring their families and thrive. And I think that's part of what we do in New York and in New York City Transit, right? We're part of that ecosystem which allows folks, regardless of their income or their race or where they come from, to be able to, you know, get around our city and to contribute, you know, to the lives of their family or to contribute to our society.
No, amazing. I didn't know a lot of these facts, and it's very interesting the way you describe. And I feel the job is the perfect place to learn. You don't learn in college. We really want to learn, go into the job and learn. And like you, I never studied transportation. And here I am. I'm working in the sector.
Amazing.
And yeah, so great to see, you know, and thanks for sharing that. Now, other question I have is now you control. And everybody agreed that life of a transit CEO, especially in North America, is not easy. It's really a tough job, very hard job, and you really need to get your hand dirty. And on the other hand, that life of a consultant is a bit easier.
Yes.
I mean, not too much, but a bit easier.
Yes.
What inspired you to take this role of president of New York City Transit? And what vision you have for the future of public transportation in New York City? Sure. Like you mentioned, it's your second stint.
Yeah. So yeah, you know, as you mentioned, I had some government experience in Massachusetts and worked for a great governor, Deval Patrick, when I was there. And decided I wanted to try back to the private sector. So working for BCG, you know, which is one of the largest consulting firms in the world, was there for about 5 years and had a chance to consult with and provide advice to, you know, a whole host of sort of clients, including transit systems, both here in the US and abroad, actually. And I would say this about consulting. You know, you get a broad perspective on what other systems are doing. I would just say that, interestingly enough, and I won't name them, but some of your listeners who work at some of the best transit systems in the world, you know, we hold up in the United States as the examples we want it, you know, to embody. They themselves admitted they weren't perfect and sought our help. Which was interesting. But I will say this, I think the frustrating part of being a consultant is, you know, you're giving advice. You're not an implementer necessarily. And so, you know, probably about 30% of the time, what we suggested was actually implemented and the other 70% for whatever reason or reasons wasn't. And, you know, I missed the ability to implement and to be part of a team that, you know, sort of takes that advice, if you will, and, you know, makes a system or a city better. And, you know, New York, you know, Jana Lieber, who's my boss, reached out and he's got a great reputation. I like Jana. I wouldn't work for just anybody. And I was happy to come work for him. But to have the opportunity to come and work and live in New York, I mean, it's just an opportunity for someone like you and I who are in transportation. It was just too good to pass up. So it's you know, it's not something that I necessarily aspired to or had on my list of things I wanted to do before I retired. But when the opportunity sort of came about, hard to say no to the, you know, the, I would argue the pinnacle of public transportation in North America.
Oh yeah. It's a largest agency. And also, in fact, like you, I started my career in consulting, and the biggest thing I feel bore in consulting is not ability to implement, and you just give advice, create report, but
right,
you don't see implement. And when you work in transit, you see people, and I see a lot of your video. You actually go on a ground and you want to see and mingle with people and see how it is impacting their life. And you feel somewhere satisfaction. You know, I tell people public transit is the most social and noble work one can do, because you are helping people to reach to their destination and do that. So
well,
thank
and
you.
The other thing I was going to say, the other thing I'll build upon that, if you don't mind, is what I love about public transportation is that you can be forward thinking, right? You talked about sort of, you know, the future of transportation. And you can think about 50, you know, 10, 15, 20 year segments, but I also have a rush hour to deliver today.
Yeah.
Right. You know, when I became general manager of the MBTA now 14 years ago or so, my mother gave me a clock with a quote on it that said, "You're only as good as your last rush hour." Right. So that's like my mother judging me twice a day. But as a transit CEO, regardless of where you are in the world, right, you've got that cadence, you know, call rush hours, but that cadence to deliver on a daily basis. But then you're thinking about, you know, new signal systems, you know, CBTC, which I know we're going to talk about, you know, over the next 10 years, or here in New York, we're on the verge of implementing congestion pricing, right, which has been talked about for 15 years, if not longer, in New York City. And, you know, we're about to put out a capital plan in the fall, draft capital plan, that looks at what our needs are, you know, 5 years and beyond. So that's what I love about this job is, and being in public transit is, you know, there's the here and now, like delivering. Yeah. Right now, we're in the middle of a Friday afternoon rush hour here in New York. But we also need to chart a course for the next, you know, decade or beyond.
No, that's a beautiful quote. You are as good as the last rush hour. So life is not easy. And I feel you are also lucky in a sense. A lot of people don't know that you work on two of the oldest systems in the world, the Boston, which was started in 1897, and New York, which started in 1904. So it's there are very few CEO who get that opportunity to work on these old system. And I'm curious, like, what are the lessons you learn working in these legacy system? It's old, it has a heritage value, it change. And I know you are very pro innovation and technology, and you want to bring these innovation, these organization, but issue is the change management. So I would love to know some initiative you're doing at New York. I know you're doing a lot of things, but something you want to share.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing about working in two systems that are, you know, over 120 years old. I mean, so the history and the DNA of a city, in some instances, like, you know, maybe places like Atlanta, for example, or even as Phoenix continues to build out its system, it's not quite part of this, you know, the social fabric or the civic fabric, although I think it's, you know, they're building in that direction.
Yeah.
But here, you know, everyone has a New York subway story. And in Boston, it's pretty similar, where everyone sort of has a T story. Whether they were growing up in the city or taking, you know, commuter rail back into the city. So there's a DNA, there's a commonality, there's a bonding. And here, New York in particular, regardless of your income level or who you are, or where you come from, you know, there was a story a couple of days ago that Billy Joel took his, you know, took a train, you know, into his last concert or one of his last concerts at Madison Square Garden. You know, you see New Yorkers of all sort of stripes, if you will, using the system. So everyone sort of has a story. And I think capturing that sort of magic as you tell a story about why public transportation is important, I think that can resonate in cities like New York and Boston. Now, the obvious flip side is everything's really old, right? And, you know, people, elected officials, citizens, business people get excited usually about new things, extensions, you know, the Green Line extension to Somerville, for example, in Boston, or most recent extension, like the 7 line to Hudson Yards, which has created this whole new neighborhood in, you know, the sort of Midtown West of on Manhattan. But we have signal systems that were installed here in the 1950s, right? Or, you know, rail that was installed 100 years ago. And that infrastructure that might not be glamorous or sexy needs to have a constituency as well. And I have found that old systems have a hard time building a constituency and building a group of individuals who understand that the investment required, can't see it, but needs to be consistent in order for that reliability to occur. And I think that's a challenge, right? Is building. And even with the FTA and the USDOT, you know, they have some of their funding programs in the past have been very focused on sort of new starts, you know, new programs. I think as of, you know, in the last few years, they've really sort of focused in, around state of good repair, which is great. But I think those are some of the challenges for older systems is getting citizens, riders, elected officials to understand that there's a lot of investment that has to occur in order to keep that infrastructure reliable.
No, in fact, I read one of the projects you're doing is, which nobody thought about, is changing the lighting system in the station. And it was fluorescent light, and the world has moved LED long back, but it doesn't look glamorous. Nobody care about it, but it has big impact on the safety, security. Yeah.
We're changing 150,000 light bulbs across our system, but the stations will be brighter, they'll look cleaner, and they'll be safer, actually. And they'll also save us money. You know, on the change manager question you asked about quickly, I mean, I would say that, you know, the good news is we have a lot of folks here who have significant tenure. In some instances, their families have worked here. So there's great history and knowledge. But I would say, generally speaking, and this isn't just in government organizations. I've also seen it in large private sector organizations.
Yeah,
there is a reluctance. You know, there's a risk aversion, right? There's typically an aversion to take a risk. And that's because in some instances, risks aren't rewarded. Or if taking a risk, you know, not a risk that has a safety attached to it, for example, but if you take a risk and start a new app or a new program or something and it fails, you know, particularly in the public sector, there's a lot of media who want to be critical or criticized, right? As opposed to, you know, praise, you know, they took a risk, it didn't work, and let's try something new. I think that's the biggest challenge in an organization like this, which is the risk aversion and creating an environment where it's okay to fail. It's okay. Yeah. And you just pick yourself up and move on. I know that sounds easy. And as I said, it's just not government, it's larger organizations, the private sector too, but creating that culture is hard. It's very hard.
No, credit goes to you, because I see that culture is now being implemented in New York.
We have work to do, but
I know, but at least, you know, at the leadership level, when you say the tolerance of failure and giving freedom to people, it's an amazing thing. And I know one of the recent project which you also got an award from UITP is about this predictive maintenance, and yes, you expanded that project. Would love to know a little more about, because New York has large fleet of buses, and you implemented this predictive maintenance project, and how you are achieving cost saving with that project.
Yeah, so we've done a lot, and I appreciated the recognition for the team that has been pushing this, right? So I think this is a place where our industry generally hasn't done a very good job of considering how predictive maintenance and predictive technology can help us improve reliability. So as you said, on buses, what we did is took a technology and overlaid it on our bus telematics. And, you know, with some success, we were able to predict for a particular component of the bus, a failure before it failed. And so we were able to get the bus out of service before, or not send it even out on the road, before we had customers on it. And then what was also beginning to develop too is then the telematics became so smart that rather than the mechanics we had or have having to diagnose the problem, in fact, it would not only predict a failure, but then say to the mechanic, change these two parts. So it would provide a repair plan as well. So we got rid of the diagnostic and went right to the repair plan. So that saved us time, and it saved us on parts, right? Because we were specifically changing the right part. So we're out now to bid to see if there are other folks out there who can provide this the scale. And then we've started to do a little bit of this on our infrastructure side as well. I'm very interested in understanding how we can use predictive maintenance for track circuits, signals, switches, again, you know, predicting failure before it fails out in our system. And we've started a little bit that. And then finally, car equipment too, you know, to the extent that any of your listeners work for major rolling stock companies, here's a hint. If you're pitching us for rolling stock, this is something I am very interested in. So the cutting edge companies, to the extent they have, and I think that would bode well for all systems across the world, not just in New York, right? So, but I think predictive maintenance is the wave of the future for transit and will help reliability wherever it's rolled out.
Yeah, no, in fact, in Europe now they're going next step of predictive. They are saying more prescriptive maintenance. So they are saying, why do I do predictive? I just know that 5 years this is going to happen and how I can maintain my fleet health. So I'll happy to share more detail on that.
Yeah, but using data, right? That's all about data, right? So in that instance, you know, rather than saying what the OEM says or what a regulation might say, and we did this a little bit too, looking at our overhauls of our rolling stock here on the subway side, we were doing a 6-year overhaul, maintenance overhaul, and we did a whole big data analysis and saw that in fact, 6.5 years was the right time to do this major overhaul. So we've switched with, again, improved costs, but no impact to reliability.
No, that's amazing. No, thanks for sharing that and like talking about infrastructure as well. One thing, I was checking your LinkedIn profile and really loved your headline when you say customer satisfaction is our North Star, because not many people talk about North Star, especially in transit world. We always talk about the vehicle and the maintenance and the staff, but you talk about customer satisfaction. And I saw you visit on the ground, and I saw one of your video, you were talking to people who parked in the bus lane and telling them not to park in the bus lane. It's a bus lane, why you park your vehicle. So just want to understand how you're looking at increasing the customer satisfaction by using technology to improve the efficiency, safety, and overall experience.
So I've been in this business 20 years, and you know, mean distance between failure and on-time performance and customer journey time. And you know, you go down the list of all the things that we, you know, measure in this business are all important. But to me, the absolute number one and most important is customer satisfaction. You know, if someone made the joke to me once that if you're running 100% on time, but you're punching every customer in the face, they're probably not going to be satisfied. And that's not going to show up in your on-time performance data, right? I mean, yeah, it's, but it will show up in your customer satisfaction. Yeah. Obviously, that is an exaggeration. But so what we're doing here in New York City Transit, when I started as president 2 years ago, we started at what we'd call a pulse survey. So on a monthly basis, we're getting about a few thousand customers on bus, subway, and paratransit, which are the three modes I'm responsible for, to see what the customer's mood is. And, you know, getting details on safety and performance and cleanliness. And then every 6 months, Jasper, what we're doing is doing a deep dive. We're getting over 100,000 customers to respond. Wow. And that we get by bus route and station. And we can really then dig deep into what our customer sentiments are. And then as a result, move resources to, you know, more cleaning staff here, or, you know, you talked about the LED program we have. We're starting that in stations where we have lower customer satisfaction scores. So that we've really reoriented New York City Transit. I'm proud of this. And, you know, whenever I leave someday, I think this is the thing I'll probably leave behind, is that folks will be reoriented to, you know, customer satisfaction as the North Star, as the number one metric. The bus lane. So I always think that subways in every city I've consulted in or worked in typically sort of wins the day. People love trains. Sometimes the customers are more unified and are louder, but our bus customers tend to be less organized, usually from poor communities or minority communities that aren't as organized. And as a result, bus becomes a second-class citizen. We have put bus front and center here. We're doing a bunch of things. But one thing that, as you saw on my LinkedIn, I'm a little obsessed with is cars parked or using bus lanes. Yeah. And I have a ticket book over to my left. I can actually write tickets. I took a course, an hour course, which is not that efficient nor effective. But in May, we will be sending out on our buses. Our buses will become cameras on wheels. And so we can now ticket cars that are parked in bus lanes, but in starting in May in New York, we'll not only be able to do that, but we'll be able to ticket cars that are parked in bus stops, which is also a pet peeve of mine. It's also a civil rights issue too. Our customers who are disabled, you know, in wheelchairs, you sometimes we have to put them out in like traffic because there's, you know, that's crazy. And then cars that are double parked along our roads that get in the way of buses. So, you know, we're obsessed with our number one issue for our bus customers in New York City is wait times and speed.
Yeah.
So the more we can speed up, the happier they'll be, you know, the quicker they'll get from their, you know, from where they're picked up to their destination. So we've made a huge effort to get the word out. And by the way, from the data we've seen, behavior changes. Like once a New Yorker gets a ticket from a bus, 80% of those folks never get another ticket. Like their behavior changes immediately. So I think this works, and I would love to see this in other cities because I have no doubt it will work in other cities as well.
No, that's amazing. And in fact, I don't know if a lot of people know that you don't own a car. And
I don't. It's true. It's true. I have not owned a car since 2010, I think. Oh. And it's a funny story. I'll tell you a quick story. So this goes to show you. So one Christmas, one of my gifts from my wife, Jane, was a membership to Zipcar, you know, right? So it's the car sharing program. And I said, honey, this is really great, but we own a car. She said, no, I donated it 2 weeks ago. So the car had been gone for 2 weeks and I didn't notice it. So That goes to show you how often I use the car. It could have been stolen, but she just donated it without telling me, and I didn't know. But no, we rely heavily on public transit, Zipcar, you know, as I mentioned, as well, and we're able to get around.
That's amazing. No, that thanks for sharing that story. And I remember when you're a user of yourself, so you see a lot of things in the system. And that's what I'm seeing more and more. North America, like most of the CEOs, are now user of transit. So they firsthand experience and change. Now, one of the key challenge for the legacy system, like you mentioned, is the asset renewal. And it's also rolling stock signaling system, like you mentioned. And one of the sad thing in US right now is like we don't have any city with a complete CBTC, communication based on train control.
Correct.
In Canada, we are lucky. We have two cities, Vancouver and Montreal now. But in US, we don't have even any city. What's a New York City plan in that area? And why do you think US city should adopt this system quickly?
Yeah. So, I mean, our plan is to do it across the system, but it's going to take time. It's incredibly expensive. You know, we don't shut down. We're a 24-hour operation, 7-day a week. And so the CBTC that we are building out, we're building out a few lines now. We're doing it around service, right, that we're running. But on the flip side, CBTC, so our L line and our 7 line both have full CBTC. The L line is a little older technology, but it is still CBTC. The 7 line is very new, reasonably new. And not surprising, those are our best performing lines with the highest customer satisfaction, right? So, I mean, that is the reason, right? You can run, obviously, as folks know, rather than a block technology, you can run trains safely that run closer together, right? So you have shorter headways.
Yeah.
On the 7 line that runs from Hudson Yards, by the way, my home station, so I'm on the 7 line every day, to Queens, out to, you know, just east of where the Mets, the New York Mets play baseball. We run service every 2-3 minutes during rush hour. And those trains are reasonably full. And by the way, when there are Mets games, of which there are 81 a year, right, at least, those trains are very busy. Or when the U.S., you know, the U.S. Open comes, the tennis tournament in late August, early September. I mean, those trains are packed. It's the best way to get out. Or if you want to go to LaGuardia Airport, for that matter.
Yeah.
So we have, but CBTC, coming back to why, it just greatly improves your reliability, your throughput, and at the end of the day, customer satisfaction. So, you know, some of that is wrapped up in our congestion pricing. And so once we get congestion pricing, those dollars are dedicated to our capital program.
Okay.
But we're going to continue to push for CBTC across, you know, across the system for sure.
Oh, that's amazing. No, I agree with you that it improved the reliability, and with the reliability, customer satisfaction will increase. You know, with the CBTC, one of the other challenges coming is you've seen this autonomous mobility. And now Waymo is expanding. They are in San Francisco, they are in LA and expanding. And I feel in next 5 years, we will see much more robo-taxis around different cities and around the globe. What impact do you see for transit player in coming year, and any plan that New York City want to implement some autonomous technology for buses or some other vehicle?
Yeah, so it's interesting. You know, I remember when I was transportation secretary in Massachusetts 10 years ago, and we were predicting 10 years from now, the technology would be ubiquitous. And I was vacationing in Phoenix and Scottsdale a few weeks ago, and I saw the very first Waymo, you know, autonomous vehicle one. So we'll see about the scale, but it's clearly coming, right? And I would say a few things. Autonomy probably, you know, helps, for example, individuals who are unable to drive, you know, customers who are disabled, for example, and paratransit is maybe a place where we might see, although if the customer needs assistance getting on in and out of vehicle, that's something different. But that might be something where we see that as sooner in terms of adoption. I think here in New York, we're probably a long way off. Obviously, there are union considerations. We, you know, our jobs for our bus operators are very good middle-class jobs in a city where middle-class jobs are harder and harder to sort of find, particularly for those who maybe didn't go to college. But the streets here, you know, are incredibly complex, right? And with dining structures these days, and you know, sort of, we are doing a pilot right now with a company to improve our real time bus information to our customers. And they did a study and said something like 20% of our bus routes on a daily basis are on some kind of a detour. Just give you a sense for like the construction and the protests, and you know, New York is a very dynamic place.
Yeah.
So I think for the road, I'm not sure. Like maybe we'll see it in other cities. Like as I said, maybe in a Phoenix or a Fort Lauderdale, where you have wider streets. You know, more investment has been made in streets, for example, and the street grid is is a little more predictable. But it will have an impact. You know, that said, then you've got to think about, you know, single occupancy vehicles again, and probably less so here because we'll have congestion pricing. So we're going to try to incentivize folks to utilize public transit. But what we've also seen in this city is, you know, with cars in the road and congestion, you know, safety issues increase, you know, so pedestrian and bicycle accidents, emergency vehicles have a harder time getting around the road. And then, you know, the other question is sort of electrification. You know, that's something else everyone's looking at. But again, we're probably 10, 20 years away from like material electrification of vehicles. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, we have a plan to electrify or to go to zero emissions for all of our buses, but that's still 16 years away to get to 100%. So, you know, autonomy, zero emission vehicles, they're coming, not as soon as probably we expected, but over the next, I would say, 20 years is probably the time frame where changes occur, but certainly not in the next five.
Amazing. Yeah. So this is my last question. One thing I want to check is there is a lot of discussion about this artificial intelligence and generative AI. What do you see the potential use case in mobility space for generative AI?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few things. You know, security, for example, is a bit of a focus of ours right now. And so, you know, can AI be overlaid on our camera system, for example, and you know, see if folks have, for example, a weapon on them, trying to come into their subway system? I mean, obviously, there are privacy concerns as it relates to using facial recognition and whatnot. I think that's a question that, you know, we as a society will need to grapple with, but I think AI for purposes of like weapons detection is something that may be nascent, but might be interesting for us to take a look at in the future. I think AI as well can help us with that predictive maintenance question I raised earlier, right? So taking these incredible amounts of data that we have, and we have a lot of data, but really using AI to generate some high-performing analytics to help us improve our, to improve our service. For example, I think that's another important and practical use of AI. But I also think too, you know, as I mentioned, there are privacy concerns that need to be considered in the public space.
Yeah, no, thank you so much, Richard. I mean, thank you for sharing your knowledge. Generally, I end this podcast with a rapid fire question round.
Great.
Generally to know personal side of your, and if you are ready, I'll start with my rapid fire.
Go for it.
Okay, so my first question will be, if you are not in transit or consulting space, what other profession you would have selected?
Maybe a game show host.
Ah. Any particular reason for that or just?
You know, as a kid, I remember watching The Price is Right. And my mother would tell me that when she had friends over for lunch, I was 3 years old, I'd be always giving out like a new refrigerator, a new car to one of her friends. I don't know why, but. So maybe because I like to make people happy. I don't know, but
that's a reason, you know, you like to make people happy. I love that line. Now you travel across the world and seen different cities. And I know you will be biased, but which is your favorite city in the world and why?
Oh, Paris. I love Paris. The city is beautiful. The people are lovely. I was able, when I worked for the commuter rail, which was the majority shareholder was Veolia, now Transdev, I would, you know, a couple times a year spend time in Paris for business, and absolutely loved Paris. So if there's any place, Tokyo is a close second, I would say, but Paris is my favorite.
Amazing. No, it's a favorite for many people. And you have Olympics this year, so more reason for you to go.
True. It's very true.
Which is your favorite book?
Remembering America by a guy named Dick Goodwin. So Doris Kearns Goodwin, who's a famous historian in the United States, her husband wrote a book. And it's about basically his time as a speechwriter for President Kennedy and then ultimately President Johnson. So it's a real, it's an amazing book about the history of the U.S. in the 1960s. So the civil rights movement, the Vietnam War, and all the tumult that was occurring. So, and it just, it's a great, he's a great storyteller.
Amazing, amazing. I'll read that. I'll go back. And this is my last question now. And is, if you can change one thing in life, what would it be?
In my life or in life generally?
Anything.
Well, I would probably give a Metro card or an Omni card to every New Yorker. And since they try to use our system, bus or subway, at least once a day.
Amazing. No, that's, I wish, I think everybody want to have that card. Probably when I come next time, I'll claim from you to get
or it. Or I should say, you don't need either. You can just tap and go if you've got a debit credit card. So we have an open loop system. How's that?
No, that's amazing. No, thank you so much, Richard. I know it's you have such a busy schedule. So thank you for taking time out from
this business. I very much enjoyed the conversation. And thank you and UITP for all you do to help our industry continue to improve. So thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And looking forward to see you. Take care.
Yes. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye. Thank you for listening to this podcast. If you like this episode, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating as it will help us to spread our message. If you have any feedback or suggestion for this podcast, please feel free to reach out to us at info@mobility-innovators.com. I look forward to see you next time. Thank you.